listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life service for Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello, nice to be here.
The Spirit of Life service is a weekly program. Educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. And in addition to this weekly service, ICMH Church also has several other educational programs, including EmpoweredRecovery.com, which offers help for friends and family of alcoholics and addicts, Paranexus.org, an association of anomalous researchers, MetaphysicsInstitute.org that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in a variety of specialization areas, and Thomas Francis University at tfuniversity.org, which offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees. As is customary, I'd like to read our abbreviated principles of belief. The expanded version of these is at metaphysicalhumanism.org. We have 9 principles of belief, and they are, number 1, do no harm, do right. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. Number 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And number 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. If you'd like to learn more about these 9 healthy principles for living, please visit metaphysicalhumanism.org. Now tonight, I want to start off the program with a discussion on emotional blackmail. I'm going to focus on 2 general areas, one's religion, one's personal relationships. And to kind of set the tone for this, Dr. Hunter is going to read a pre-chosen card for us, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, I have here number 6 in the Life Leadership Paragon of our self-discovery cards, boundaries. I like that one. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and do not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me?
All right. The reason I chose boundaries is because it plays heavily into this concept of blackmail or emotional blackmail. So let's start off with a quick understanding what blackmail is. I'm sure we all understand what it is, but let's just set it here for the purposes of this discussion. Dictionary says that blackmail is any payment extorted by intimidation, as by threats of injurious revelations or accusations. And we've seen it in the TV shows and whatnot. You know, if you don't pay me so much money, I'm going to release these, you know, bad pictures of you with whoever, and you'll get in all kinds of trouble. You know, we've seen that as plots on TV shows and so forth, and it happens. But there are other types of blackmail, and the one I want to focus on tonight is emotional blackmail. You may be familiar with the term. Wikipedia says the term emotional blackmail appeared in 1947 in the Journal of the National Association of Deans of Women. It talked about it there. Susan Forward, who's an author and has several books out on fear, and they're good. She talks about it as well, and she also offers another thing called FOG, or FOG. It's kind of an acronym. It stands for fear, obligation, and guilt. So let's talk about emotional blackmail in two areas, specifically religion and personal relationships. I want to start with religion here. And as I go, Dr. Hunter and or Michael Kelly might have a comment, and they're welcome to jump in. There was an article the other day on, in fact, it came out yesterday on at HuffingtonPost.com, basically featuring Ann Graham Lotz, who's the daughter of the late evangelist Billy Graham. Basically, the title is that she says God sends terror attacks because of bathroom rites and evolution. There's more to it. That's just the title. But I want to read some of this to you to kind of establish where this emotional blackmail is coming in and try to highlight why it should be done. That the article starts out as terror attacks such as 9/11 and the mass shooting in San Bernardino were allowed by God because of the gay rights movement and the acceptance of evolution, evangelist Ann Graham Lotz says. Now she's quoting here, they're quoting her. Our nation seems to be shaking its fist in God's face and telling him to get out of our politics, get out of our schools, get out of our businesses, get out of our marketplace, get off the streets, she told the reporter. She goes on, it's just stunning to me that the way we are basically abandoning God as a culture and as a nation. She continues, God abandons us and he backs away and takes his hand of favor, blessings, his hand of protection away from us and abandons us, she said. Now, she makes this comment, which really makes the point, I think, about emotional blackmail. She says, we're struggling with our own pride or self-sufficiency. Ding, 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 first red flag. Gee, I don't know who's more prideful, God or us. Anyway, she continues, I think that's why God allows bad things to happen. I think that's why he would allow 9/11 to happen or the dreadful attack in San Bernardino or some of these other places to show us that we need him. We are desperate without him. Anyway, there's some other things that she...
I'm sorry. I'm sitting back here trying not to laugh.
Well, it didn't work very well. Just kidding.
Well, I had to inject her because, I know a lot of people live in fear, and a fear of all kinds of things, and they might buy into that, but really, any sane individual would not buy that.
Right.
I believe that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm with you. And the last thing that I want to quote her on saying is that she says, if 9/11 didn't turn us to prayer like that, if San Bernardino doesn't, it almost frightens me to think what it would take to make us so desperate that we'll cry out to God and we'll get on our face and repent. All right, so here's the problems with this. Here's the problems with this, okay? As I've said so many times before, any sentient, sapient entity, being, would never allow other sentient, sapient beings to worship him or her. I mean, think about that for a minute. How many of us want people to actually get down on their knees, pray to us, worship us, and do all that? Really? I mean, come on. Yeah, there are the sociopaths out there who probably want it, but normal people don't. And no evolved being would ever, ever ask that of anyone. That's kind of the base rule here. All right, so here's the blackmail. You either pray to me and turn around and repent, or I'm going to take my favor away and you're all going to die. That's essentially what God's saying. It's what he's always said. It's what the Bible's packed with. You know, you either do this or I'm going to do this. If you don't do what I want you to do, then I'm going to kill you, annihilate you, commit genocide, which is what the Bible reports. I do all these things because why? God is an angry God. He's a jealous God. wow, that sounds like a dysfunctional, mentally ill human being, not an evolved being. So here's this preacher gal, Anne Graham Watts, basically promoting fear and distorting any kind of thing, trying to do this emotional blackmail. You either do this, or I'm going to remove my favor. I'm going to allow these things to hurt you and harm you and kill you. Now tell me this, folks. Which parent with several kids would ever do such a thing? Really? What parent would ever have the thought that if the child doesn't do what they want, they're going to remove their protection from that child? They're going to maybe even do more, go and physically assault that child. Now, yes, we have parents who abuse their children. They're not normal. They're sociopaths or psychopaths. They're not normal. But let's keep it within the confines of normal. No parent would do that. No parent would allow that. No parent. So why would God do that? Does somebody want to make a comment?
I would just say that as much as there's to say about that, I mean, obviously it has nothing to do with any notion of what God might actually be. It has only to do with this Graham, or this version of Graham's desire to feel like there's a sense of control and order to the world.
Yep, and that's the thing about blackmail, is it's control. Emotional blackmail is control. So here's what I'm trying to achieve here. I'm not just trying to pick on religion, okay? I mean, here's the thing, folks. I don't know if there's a creator. I really don't. I have no clue whether there's a creator. Sometimes I think there is, sometimes I think there isn't, but I have no clue. However, the God that I'm talking about is not the creator. It's just this dysfunctional being that was made in man's image, that is talked about in all these sacred religious texts that there are, including the Bible and all the others. That's the one I'm talking about. That is not the creator. That is some created, mythical, there's so many things. It started in the mind of one person, and religion has become a scam. They scam money off people. They promote fear. They tell you you're a loser, a sinner, that you need God's favor. Why? You know, they don't teach you to stand on your own two feet. They don't teach you to seek your own counsel, seek the guru within. They don't teach you practical life skills that help you to be successful and not, quote, need anything outside of yourself to be who you are. It's packed with them esteem. Them esteem is, I only feel good about myself when I'm doing what other people think I should be doing. I only feel good about myself when I'm doing what God thinks I should be doing. That is them esteem. It is unhealthy. Self-esteem is internal validation and internal expectations. Them esteem is external expectations and validation. So when we succumb to this concept that there's some God up there watching over us or trying to protect us or not, or that we have to do certain things, we're going to burn in hell, or, you know, we're not going to incur his favor, we're going to incur his wrath, that is all emotional blackmail. It is a scam. It is not real. And it is designed to promote fear and pain and
money.
To keep people from standing on their own two feet.
And send money.
Oh, yeah. And the money thing. Yeah. you know, and that's the thing I've always known about ICMH Church. I mean, if you think about it, I would love to think that our principles of belief are so spiritually healthy that people would beat a path to our door to adopt them into their lives. That does not what's happening. Because people are conditioned. This is not inborn. You're not born with this. We have all been conditioned at one point in our lives to think that we need something outside of ourselves, such as God. I thought that for a good part of my life, the majority of my life, you know, that we need something outside to save us. The fact is, there's nothing outside of us that's going to save us. We need to save us. That's healthy. We need to come together as a species. Stop the tribal warfare. Stop the bickering. Stop the fighting. Stop the killing. And we need to get along and make a better world. That's what we need to do, because it's not coming from anywhere else. So if you are, and hopefully I haven't offended anybody, but you got to think about what I've been saying.
Well, I guess me laughing might have offended somebody too then. I honestly, you see, when I look at and listen to these things, I think they're just nuts. I'm sorry, like that's my thing. And I think it's, I mean, it's sad funny. It's not funny funny, but you know, you got to deflect it with a bit of humor because it's just not even, you know, I think too, sorry, Mike, I'm just going to throw this in. I think if we really want to look at this a little bit is ask a question. Once we start asking one question, we go into 10 questions and then we realize how ridiculous all that stuff is.
Oh yeah, very much.
Because it really is.
Oh, no worries.
Sorry, Michael, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the reason it's completely ridiculous to us is because they're going at it with an entirely different objective. I mean, it kind of, to me, sounds, it validates kind of an old idea that religion is almost an evolutionary construct to provide social cohesion to different tribal groups. And that, the reason they behave this way is because the point of the religion is not to find truth or not to find spirituality within oneself. The point of the religion is to provide social cohesion, there, you know, ergo, social rules, parameters, operating, you know, restrictions. So that's why when people don't conform to those rules and those, you know, quote unquote dogmatic laws, that's what sets these people, you know, people like, and I apologize, I can't remember her first name, but the Graham that was spoken. Anne, thank you.
Anne, lots.
And, you know, it has nothing to do with God. It has everything to do with their idea of social cohesion and what they think society should be. They were culturally indoctrinated, and it has nothing to do with even spirituality. If they were born in some other part of the world, it would be an entirely different thing. It's just not genuine.
It's all a matter of control. That's what religion is. It's about control. And you know what? If I can put it on God, if I can say that God needs you to send money to this church, that's a whole different story than if I say I need you to send money to this church. Well, we don't want to do it for you, but hey, we'll do it for God. That's why, you know, these Christian religions can get so many donations, so many volunteers, because they're doing it for a bigger purpose, so to speak, or a higher authority, so to speak. And yet, without that, it seems like people don't do it. But see, we can turn that around. So I don't want to get too off topic here, but the point of this whole thing was the emotional blackmail, you know, from religion. You either do it this way or you're going to burn in hell, you're going to die, you're going to incur God's wrath, God's going to send more terrorists and all that other crap to us and punish us. That obviously is not the psyche of a highly evolved being and who's stable. All right, so we talked about religion. Let's talk about more personal relationships. And remember, we're talking about boundaries here too. We have to maintain healthy boundaries. Personal relationships. Emotional blackmail is rampant in toxic relationships, in addiction-based relationships, and others. It can also present itself at work, too. You either do this or you're not going to get the promotion. You either do this or you're not going to get the raise, whatever. In personal relationships, though, we see that all the time. Have you ever heard this? If you loved me, you'd do this or not do that. That is emotional blackmail. And in a moment, I'll tell you how to respond to those things. There's so many other things that can come up, so many things. If you don't do what I want you to do, then I'm going to beat you, or I'm going to withhold something from you, or I'm not going to let you do this or that or whatever. This happens all the time in relationships, and we have to be on the watch for it. Emotional blackmail is manipulation. It's unhealthy manipulation, and it's about control. And it's very simple. If you do or don't do this, I'm not going to do or not do that. It's just that's what it is. And some extreme cases, they're not. These are not few and far between either. They're actually pretty rampant in addiction-based relationships. And that is, and it can turn into, you can go from emotional blackmail to emotional terrorism. And that's exactly what these folks go through when they're in an alcoholic relationship. The family, friends, but especially the family, goes through this emotional terrorism on a daily basis. And it's not a thing. It destroys people. It destroys children. It creates you know, low self-esteem and a host, a myriad of other issues in these children as they grow up. And that's why parents who are in this kind of a situation, you need to get out now. If you are in a relationship with an addict or an alcoholic and their drinking is causing you trouble or your family trouble, it's time. Leave it. You can't fix them. It's not your job to fix them. It's their job to fix them. You may think that sounds cold-hearted. It ain't. It's the only way. And if you have a problem like this, then you have a choice. You can either take care of the problem now, or you can suffer longer and still take care of the problem later, or die from the pain. The fact is that sooner or later you will take care of the problem. The only question is, how much suffering do you want in between? That's my now or later rule. If you got a problem, you got a choice. You can take care of it now or suffer longer and still take care of it later. But either way, you will take care of it eventually. And that is a nugget that you can take to the bank. If you're in that situation, you have children in that situation, and you keep them there, that's child abuse, and you are responsible for it, for not protecting those children. So that's emotional terrorism. Let's go back to emotional blackmail. How can you respond to someone who is trying to use emotional blackmail? For example, if you really love me, you'd do this. You know, it's not hard, folks. The fact is that I really do love you, but I'm not doing that. And frankly, if you really love me, you wouldn't try to use emotional blackmail on me. How's that one? You know, you have to, that's assertiveness. That's protecting your boundaries. I need you to do this, and if you can't do this, then I'm going to have to, you know, maybe think about separation. Well, don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out. You know, that, you don't put me in a position like that. You don't back me into a corner. If you're threatening me, you might as well just move on out. Here are two questions that you can ask that will help you to decide whether a relationship is worth continuing. I call it the two most important relationship questions. The first one is, what do you bring to the relationship? The second one is, what does the other person bring to the relationship? Let's focus on the first one. What do you bring to this relationship? In other words, what do you add? What do you subtract? You have to make an honest exploration of those. You need to write them down. In fact, you can use a pro and con, a T-chart. Pros on one side, cons on the other. What do you bring to this relationship? What do you add? What do you subtract? Be honest. Then you ask the second question. What does the other person bring to this relationship? What do they add? What do they subtract? You write them down. You're honest. You keep your emotions out of it. You just write down the answers. Then you can also give them a weighting. Maybe this particular point is ranks a 0 to 10 score. You can rank them or weight them. Add up the points, and you'll know. Now, here's the deal. Anytime somebody is taking more from a relationship than they give, and they're not willing to change, the relationship is over. Period. And I don't care who it's with. It can be with your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your spouse, partner, best friend. I don't care who it's with. It's anytime somebody takes more than they give and they're not willing to change, the relationship is over. Period. Period. A lot of people think, well, you could just quit the relationship with your parent. Yes, I have. Because they did the emotional blackmail. They were not willing to change. I'm not living my life. They're adults. They're older than I am. They ought to know better. They ought to know better. And the people who don't know better but ought to are not evolving. They're not investing in themselves. So when it comes to emotional blackmail, stick up for yourself. Identify it, recognize it, and say, do you realize that you're trying to use emotional blackmail on me right here with what you just said? I don't do emotional blackmail. You have to say that kind of a thing. So you want to rephrase that. And if they threaten you or something like that, obviously, depending on the severity of it, you'll know what to do. I mean, if it's very, very serious, if they're threatening with your life or something like that, you get out of that situation the best you can and you contact the authorities. But if it's just one of these incidental ones between people, you call them on it. You're trying to emotionally blackmail me, and I don't do that. So if you're telling me that if I don't do this, our relationship's over, then I'm sorry about that. It's been real. It's been fun. I'm moving on. By you're the one who's telling me that, so I'll see you later. Not too soon. Any additional comments from Dr. Vicky or Michael?
Well, I think it's a sensitive topic, to be honest.
Sure.
I appreciate the passion that you have for it, but when it sometimes for people it's a long drawn out process.
Sure
it doesn't. It doesn't just happen by saying, "Oh, you were mean to me. I'm leaving now," because people don't know and don't have a gauge of what point is mean or cruel is cruel. They don't have a frame of reference. If that's all you've ever known is pain.
Right. And another thought that I had is, you know, how do you know how long to give? I mean, how long do you wait until you realize that the other person in that relationship is not going to change?
That's a judgment call.
It's a good question, though. The first shelter for battered women was started in the UK in 1972. And I wish I could remember her name, but a woman who wrote a book based on, and she called it, but anyway, my just totally slipped my mind. What she determined, though, is people who are actually addicted to pain versus those who are abused. There's two very important distinctions. And the story, what struck her one day is she walked into a room and a young mom was changing a baby's diaper. And she was poking the baby with a pin and laughing. And the baby was laughing. And it occurred to her in that moment, and this is in the early days of studying psychology too and social psychology, is that there are people who only know pain. And their pain to pleasure messages are quite confused. And of course there's varying degrees of it, needless to say. Then there are people who inadvertently, with no frame of reference, end up in a relationship that is emotionally, mentally, physically abusive. And generally those are the people who say, wait a minute, you know, they give it a bit of time, they hang in there, they try to figure it out, and they say, you know what, this isn't for me, I'm out of here. And of course, you know, on a scale, there's any number of degrees to this, but I think that largely in our society, people are so used to being uncomfortable, so used to discomfort, so used to struggle, and just sometimes happy to have attention, that's the best amount of joy that they've known in their life. And that's very hard to give up. So, you know, how do you change? And I think, to me, the most integral route to this is how do we re-signal ourselves to know that pain is pain and pleasure is pleasure? Because it's a really important distinction to make.
And directly connected to that is the crisis mentality. You know, if you grew up in an alcoholic home, you probably have the crisis mentality. In other words, you don't feel really good unless there's some crisis going on. And when there is no crisis going on, we create a crisis because we need those crises to feel normal. And once we recognize that about ourselves, then we need to arrest that. We need to stop that crisis mentality and crisis thinking, because we don't need a crisis to be happy. So.
You know, that book, it just popped in my head. The name of that book was called Prone to Violence. It has not been in print for quite some time, but if anybody can find it anywhere, you know, secondhand bookstores, probably one of the most enlightening, awakening types of read that you can have on this particular subject. It's fascinating. Because you're right, and there are, if you come from a dysfunctional background, I might recommend that you also consider to read the Adult Child of an Alcoholic book. It's fantastic. Janet Wojtyts is one of the best authors. I've read many of these different ACOA books. And it's not just if you had an alcoholic background. It's very clear that anybody who has come from a particular rigid background, it could include religion for that matter, that there are certain behaviors that tend to go with that, like predetermining what somebody's going to do next, or trying to stay on top of things, or, you know, controlling the outcome and always being fearful. And another thing is people come out of those kinds of backgrounds with hypersensitivity to emotions and thinking and behaviors. So it's very interesting reading. I think you can't get enough information if you're on the journey to becoming whole when you've come out of those kinds of backgrounds.
All right, and another book that I will recommend, if you are in an alcoholic relationship, you don't know what to do, you need to visit empoweredrecovery.com. And there you can get, which is my book, which frankly is the book, state of the art for alcoholic relationships, called the Alcoholic Relationship Survival Guide. You can get that at empoweredrecovery.com. In fact, we even have a course on it in our IMHS Metaphysics Institute curriculum for those who are specializing in spiritual counseling, life coaching, that they can take a course on this. It is a powerful book. It is life-changing, and I don't know of anything better. And it's comes straight from hard-earned experience. All right, so any concluding thoughts, Michael, before we move on?
Well, I think we covered it pretty well, but it's just very difficult when you have that much history with, you know, even with family and everything. It's just, it can be very difficult to change these, you know, imagine the scaffolds that you build in your mind to support the realities around you for so many years. It can be, it's colored by that crisis mentality that you spoke of, and then you begin to see the world that way. So it's not even so much that you're creating it, it's just that you see it as, it's just the filter that you view life through. Everything just shows up as it, without almost any work on your part at all. It takes a lot of work to change it.
You know, but all I right. think when we... Absolutely. And, you know, the card that we pulled earlier, boundaries, if we can just put up tiny little boundaries to begin with, it's a good start point. You know, like setting little boundaries, do something nice for yourself so you can start to have something to compare it to. And because it is hard.
And,
it is,
you know,
very difficult.
One of the key things that, you know, I've heard several times throughout my life, many times, you got to take your power back. Once you, yeah.
Good point. See, how do we leave that one out?
You have to know who you are. You have to, you know, take back that. But you don't give them the power in the first place to hurt you. I mean, somebody like tries to do the emotional blackmail. If you don't do this, you know, you don't love me, then you just, I mean, if I were in that position, all you could do is laugh. Well, I guess we're going to find out, aren't we? I mean.
Or you could say, you know, perhaps you're right. Guess I'll move along. You know, it's shocking, and that's, it's the shock and awe thing, you know. You stand up for yourself and you put it right back to them. They don't know how to deal with that. And a lot of times passive-aggressive people will say things like that. They're passive-aggressive remarks. They don't know how to deal with it. They don't like confrontation.
Being childish,
really. All right, so let's move on. If you would like a card pulled from the Oracle deck, then please put your request in.
Phyllis has said she has to go back to work.
Okay.
So I was reading in the chat room, and I thought, I'm going to pull one right now for you, Phyllis. Here you are. This one is relationships. Well, and we've been talking about relationships in a way, too. For you, Phyllis, healthy relationships are interdependent and win-win. They are not dependent or codependent. Accept others for who they are and not for what they believe. And don't be judgmental. Otherwise, end the relationship, regardless of who it's with. For healthy relationships, we must add more than we subtract. This card may refer to a healthy or toxic relationship, or to the relationship of one thing or another. You know, and the flip side of that, Phyllis, I would also say in relationships, in the win-win is that bond that you feel with people who are supportive and good. You know, we go through difficult times and we sure find out who the real friends are. And so we're doing kind of a house cleaning. You know, well, those are good acquaintances but not friends, but here are some really good friends. So it's just doing that, I think, that you know, assessment and overview, a reevaluation of these kinds of things. So I hope that helps a little bit.
All right, good. So next up is Fran. Michael, you want to pull one for Fran?
Yeah, I think I can do that. All right, pulling the card for Fran. All right. This is actually kind of perfect. Number six, boundaries. And the respect for free will. Sweet.
Cool. Why don't you read that quickly and then pull another one? We'd already pulled that one earlier. But it's unique for each individual, so Fran will get two.
I'm going to read this one real quick then. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it is necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me? All right.
Okay. Great. Should pull another one.
The second card is number 14, Energy Shift, New Chapter in the Existential Suite.
Okay.
Energy shifts are a natural result from increased awareness, knowledge, and new attitudes that naturally open new chapters in one's life. It's an excellent time to clarify your vision during this time of shifting energy. Reflect, gather your energy, breathe, and step forward with a renewed sense of direction. Out with the old and in with the new.
Okay, so hope those are meaningful to you, Fran. Thanks for asking. And Dr. Vicki, would you pull one for Tabitha?
I just did already. I have groundedness. I like this one. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. Have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found. It's a good one, groundedness. You know, getting back in it.
And that's especially important for anyone in the metaphysics field. You know, there's a wide variety of beliefs out there, and it really is kind of an undercurrent to everything we always talk about, that if you're going to believe in something, fine, but do yourself the benefit of researching it and understanding why you believe it and having a reasonable basis and a reasonably defensible basis for that belief. And that's kind of why I talked about the whole God thing. You know, when you really research that, when you really look into it, and you compare where the Bible came from, understanding that there's almost not an original thought in it, it was plagiarized from other works. You know, when you really do your homework, and you really understand it, and you think deeply, and you think critically about things, you know, critical thinking skills, and then you will come and decide upon a particular belief. And you need to be able to reasonably defend it. This is a problem that so many have, and so many, specifically in the paranormal field, they're willing almost to believe anything. You look on YouTube and you'll find all kinds of stuff, you know? I mean, you look at some of these YouTube videos where they've got these, you know, things on Mars, sculptures on Mars, and you know, 90% of them are easily explainable, and that means that the person did not research it enough. They did not analyze it deeply enough. Now, to be fair, there's a couple here and there that are pretty compelling, but not all of them. And so when we do our homework on our beliefs, whether it's paranormal evidence or what we believe about the afterlife or anything, we have to factor in groundedness, reasonableness. It's just like, you know, this Ann Graham Lotz that I talked about at the outset. I mean, we can tear holes in all of her arguments based on her own Bible, let alone reasonable thinking. People don't include, they don't go wide enough. They don't include all the different aspects of it. If one thing is true, then another thing may not be true, but they can't, may not both be true. So we have to make sure that everything fits. All right. Do we have any other, anybody else who would like a card pulled?
I saw Nathan there, so
oh,
maybe
yes,
that's
Nathan, yeah. Let's do
perhaps
Nathan.
Perhaps you could do that, Michael.
Well, absolutely. All right, picking a card for Nathan. I have number 4, past, present, and future in the self-responsibility suite. And let me just read from the guidebook for number 4. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are: 1. You are accountable for your past, present, and future. 2. Don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. 3. Don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, present circumstances reflect past choices. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor. That's a good card.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other comments on that? All right.
No, that's a good one. I'm just looking through the chat and I don't see any other names. So if anyone would like a card, just please, put your name in there.
All right. So we're going to start, in lieu of that, I'm going to start wrapping things up. So tonight we talked about emotional blackmail, boundaries, healthy relationships, energy shifts, groundedness, past, present, future, and a whole lot of other things in between. And I hope that these things, if nothing else, have gotten you thinking. That's my job, to get you thinking, provoke you to thought, maybe even disturb you to action in a healthy way. Always, always keep your feet on the ground, your head on your shoulders. Review things thoroughly. Do your homework. Stick up for yourselves. Make sure your boundaries are healthy and you don't let them be encroached upon. And if you're in a serious situation, start making your plans to resolve that. If it's an alcoholic or addiction-based relationship, go to empoweredrecovery.com. You can join the forum there and you'll see literally 20,000 posts on people who have done it before you. And there's tons and tons of examples and wisdom and all that at empoweredrecovery.com. It doesn't cost you anything.
You know, if I could just interrupt, Lorena asked for a card, and we do this quick. Lorena, I pulled a card for you. Number 3, be who you are and walk your own path. And that's a really powerful one. I'll just say, move forward in the direction you need to take that best fulfills yourself. That's just a nice little brush stroke of a message for you tonight.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We appreciate your time. Thanks to everyone who's tuning in live, those who are listening to the archive. Thanks to Dr. Hunter and Michael for being here as well. And we'll see you next week. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.